Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. The Medical School Headquarters Podcast, session number 157. Hello and welcome to the Medical School Headquarters Podcast, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your pre-med success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. If you haven't checked out Pre-Med Life magazine yet, go do so, premedlife.com. They have tons of issues and articles for you to read to help you on your journey and to entertain you as well on your journey to medical school. Well, today I'm talking to Amanda. Amanda is a first-year medical student at Rocky Vista University here in Colorado, where I'm located. And Amanda has an interesting story. You'll find out how she went from wanting to do something else in the medical field to learning about osteopathic physicians and much more. And it's interesting coming from a small school and the exposure that she got in school to the medical field and her awareness of osteopaths. So take a listen and let me know what you think. Amanda, welcome to the Medical School Headquarters Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing well. Now, describe great, because right before we hit record, you were talking about how crazy your life is. Now, you're a medical student now, so why don't we start off in that phase of your life and tell the listener what you're doing now.
Sure. So I moved to Colorado from Minnesota about 5 months ago. I attend Rocky Vista University. It's a DO school about 30 minutes south of Denver. And it's kind of been a whirlwind since I started. I didn't really know what I was getting into. I kind of assumed it was more like grad school, but we honestly have a test pretty much every week. And we're just go all the time, almost 8 to 5 every day. So, it's a little overwhelming, but I'm, 5 months in, so I'm kind of starting to get used to it. But it's great. I mean, this is what I want to do, and I'm so excited to be caring for patients and everything. So I'm really happy to be here. So yeah.
What has your patient interaction been like so far?
To be quite honest, I haven't really done a lot of stuff outside of school just because I'm trying to get my bearings straight and make sure that I'm doing well academically. But so far we have done 2 different standardized patient encounters. So they're like kind of, I guess I would say that they're like patient actors, and they come in and we have learned all of our skills to do like a history and an exam, depending on what exam we're doing that day, and get feedback. So I've done 2 of those. We did one that was kind of like a general, like trying to establish a rapport kind of situation. And then we did a dermatology one. So that's all I've really done so far.
All right. That's good. The standardized patients, I think, were the hardest ones for me because I knew going into it, it was fake. And so I think I always would forget something and had to go back and ask more questions or do something else. But Let's rewind and go back to your beginning. When did you realize you wanted to be a physician?
Actually, it's kind of an interesting story. So when I graduated from my undergrad in 2012, I actually didn't even know what a DO was. I think that I went to a pretty small school, and I'm pretty sure that if I did know what it was, I thought it was kind of more like a chiropractor or something. Like, it wasn't actually a doctor. And so my school didn't really advertise it. They were kind of just like straight MD. And I actually found it because I started working as a scribe. I was originally thinking about going to PA school. And I was working in the ER. I worked there for 3 years, and I worked with a bunch of PAs and a bunch of MDs, but also a bunch of DOs. And so that was really cool. And from that, like, I kind of realized, I mean, everybody's journey is different, but I kind of realized, especially in our practice, that the PAs technically have a lesser academic degree. And so they weren't allowed to see the critical patients that came in the door. And so that kind of like changed my mindset a little bit. And I was like, well, maybe that's kind of what, in emergency medicine, that's like what the doctors kind of really, strive for. And that's what they really love to do. So I kind of looked at it again, and I realized that I probably should just go back and take some extra classes and go back to med school. So I took 3 years off in between, and I took organic chemistry and physics in the summer to try to get all my prereqs done and everything. And then I ended up applying, taking the MCAT. I think it was April of 2014 I took the MCAT. And then
let's pause a little bit here.
Sure.
And really go back, because you didn't really answer my question of when you realized you wanted to be a physician. So were you pre-med? I mean, you mentioned wanting to do PA stuff, but where did that come from too?
Oh, okay. So actually when I started undergrad, so that was in 2008, I was pre-med for about a year and a half. I took organic chemistry, and I was effectively weeded out of being a pre-med.
That's the pivot point for most people.
Right, yeah.
What was it about organic chemistry?
To be honest, I actually blame most of it on my professor. She was tenured, and she didn't actually lecture. We just went to class every day and did group work. And she actually organized the groups by test grade. So if you were not doing well, you were also in a group with everybody else that wasn't doing well. And so I think it was really weird. And I think that kind of like turned me off from it a little bit. And then going on, I was like, well, I don't think I learned enough to, I ended up getting like a B-, which isn't horrible, but I ended up thinking, oh, I don't think I know enough to go into organic chemistry too, which was actually twice as hard at my school. So I kind of looked into PA school, and I realized that a lot of PA schools don't require the second semester of organic chemistry. So that's kind of when I made my switch.
Okay. Going back a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
why were you pre-med to begin with? What was your initial interest in medicine?
I think actually my initial interest was more like in the EMS kind of field. One of my friends in high school, when he was biking, was hit by a car, and effectively his tibia was in an open fracture and sticking straight out of his leg. And then just like him kind of describing to me all the care that he got from like the paramedics. And I was kind of like, oh, that's really cool. I mean, you don't have to get a undergrad degree to become a paramedic, but that's kind of what I looked into a little bit. And then I actually did shadow when I was in high school. I shadowed my family physician, and I was like, well, this actually kind of seems like it would be for me. I really liked emergency medicine though, and I still do. So I kind of was looking towards that angle. And so that's why I decided to become pre-med.
Okay. Very interesting. So obviously, the draw wasn't big enough for you to figure out how to make it work after organic chemistry, where you basically threw your hands up, and you only got a B-. That's not a bad grade.
Yeah, that's right.
But you made this decision that this was your like pivot point, and you said, you know what, PA school doesn't require organic too. I'll just go be a PA. What was that decision process like?
That was rough. I essentially equate that to my quarter life crisis, because I've never really, I wouldn't say that I'd ever really failed at anything before that point. And I kind of realized, I also like, I guess I didn't mention, but I was in physics at the same time, and my professor's exams were only 20 points. I think I got a 12 on the first one. So that was a D. And so I actually dropped out of that class. So I was only taking 12 credits at the time. And I was like, well, I'd have to retake physics as well. And I kind of was on the 4-year graduating plan. So I decided it kind of was just be an easier route at the time to go to PA.
Okay. So it was the more instant gratification is going to the PA route.
Yeah. And I mean, to be quite honest, my best friend is a PA. And I really don't think it's an easier route at all. I just think that I kind of was my backup plan. Like, I didn't even know about it when I was kind of going through the situation. But she kind of told me about it, and I was like, well, that sounds fun. So I almost kind of followed her also. So there's kind of multiple variables about why I decided to change. But
okay. So you're obviously not in PA school. So what happened on that front to make you change your mind away from being a PA?
One of my really good friends is a PA in the practice I used to work for in the ER. And I actually talked to her a lot about it when I was kind of thinking about switching over, because I realized I'd have to take another year off of school. I'd have to go back and apply to another college and take all these prereqs again. And I was like, I don't know if I really want to do this, especially because organic chemistry and physics were not exactly my favorite classes. But I talked to her and she was like, you know, to be quite honest, like, people, PA schools want people that want to become PAs. They don't want it as a stepping stone. Like, if you actually want to be a PA, then you should apply to PA school, but people shouldn't see it as a backtrack. And I kind of, that kind of opened my eyes a little bit to realize, okay, like, I actually was kind of like using it as a backup plan. And then I kind of thought to myself a little bit, and I really didn't want that one professor I had in organic chemistry to define what I was going to do with my life. So I kind of sat back a little bit. I talked to my parents, who actually were not that excited when I told them I was going to go back to school. But now, you know, I'm here, so.
Who else did you rely on for support during that time? You talked about talking to your parents, obviously your friend who's a PA. What? Mm-hmm. How were you seeking out people to talk to?
Honestly, I think I probably could have done a better job at that. This is actually right around when there was that swine flu epidemic too, and so I actually thought I was getting sick with it. So I went home, and then I kind of actually like broke down and told my parents that I was thinking about not being pre-med anymore. We had a long chat about it, and eventually we get assigned an academic advisor. So I actually reached out to him and talked to him a little bit about it. I mean, he's in academia, so he doesn't exactly know what I was kind of going through trying to change my mind, but he kind of helped me find the PA path and like show me that I could graduate in 4 years. And that I was also really worried because I thought that the physics class that I dropped was going to show up on my transcript. And we worked to get it off my transcript. So that was really nice too. So he was actually a pretty good academic help role. Nice. But I'm actually I'm kind of more of a private person. So I didn't want to like, you know, expound this into a bigger deal than it was, but looking back, it was a pretty big deal, and I probably could have handled it better.
You didn't go on to Student Doctor Network and tell your life story on there and ask for advice?
No, not at all.
All right, so you obviously made the point to go back and be pre-med. Talk about that decision to take that leap again and go back, and how you figured out what classes you would need to take or retake and how to prepare yourself for the MCAT that obviously you had to take.
Right. So when I took the MCAT, I had taken a couple of those classes like 6 years before I had taken the MCAT. So that was definitely a refresher for that. But so when I was working as a scribe, a lot of my coworkers were also trying to get into professional school, I think most people were going towards becoming a physician, but I did have a few friends that were thinking about PA school. So we actually did talk a lot about that, and I don't know if anybody's interested in being a scribe, but I thought it was a really good jumping point into realizing, okay, this is what a doctor does every day. So that's, sorry, sidetrack. But kind of just like talking to my friends at work, talking to some of the physicians I worked with, and they kind of pushed me into it as well. They kind of like told me that a couple of my physicians actually did something very similar to me. One of my favorite physicians that I worked with, he played professional hockey for 10 years after undergrad and had no idea that he wanted to be a doctor. And once he kind of like had a few injuries and he dealt with PT and a couple orthodontics and stuff, he realized that, you know, after his hockey career, maybe that's something he could do. So he like went back and took basically a whole another undergrad. And I was like, well, if he could take 4 more years of school, I can probably do, you know, a year and a half. I enrolled in like our state university. I went to a really small school. I think my biggest class was 40, and the classes I took at the undergrad were probably like 160 each. So that was a little overwhelming, but I mean, overall it ended up working out pretty well, and I worked full time and took one class at a time and made it work. So,
okay. One class at a time. So I'm going to skip forward to applications real quick because you just mentioned that. There's this common perception among pre-meds and pre-med advisors that only taking sure. one class at a time doesn't prove to the admissions committees that you can handle the course load of medical school. Did that come up at all in any of your applications, any discussions during interviews?
In all of my interviews, I was asked why I went back and took these prereqs. And so I actually did tell them about my PA story and everything, because I wanted to be as open as possible. Actually, the guy that interviewed me at Rocky Vista, who's our principals of clinical medicine professor, he was actually a PA for about 15 years and went back and got his DO. So we had that in common. So that was probably worked in my favor a little bit. But everybody always asked me, like, okay, well, why did you only take the one class at a time? And I mean, you just have to have a really good explanation. For me, it was that I was working full time. Actually probably more than full time. I think I was working about 50 hours a week in the ER. And so I actually didn't have time to really put into another class. And I wanted to make sure I did well, could prove I could handle the coursework and work full time. And I think they were pretty excited about that.
Okay. So you had other commitments. So it wasn't like you were just kind of playing video games all day long, taking one class at a time. You were working full plus time. So your time was still taken up. So that's good. Because I think a lot of students worry about that they work full time and they really can't afford to not work full time. But they think taking one class is kind of a waste. So you're at least one person, an N of one, that shows that it can be done. statistically significant, but still.
That's true. Be done. Also, the spring that I was taking the MCAT, I hadn't even finished all the prereqs yet. I was taking physics too. And some people, I think there's also that mindset in the pre-med world that you have to have all your classes done before you study and take the MCAT. I think that was totally false. Because I was still taking physics too. I also was working still 40 plus hours a week, and I was taking a Kaplan class that was, I think, two nights a week, like for 3 hours. And I mean, it all still paid off. It worked really well. I thought I studied pretty hard for the MCAT, and I'm pretty satisfied with my results, so it's possible.
What'd you get on the MCAT?
A 31.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So talk about that. Talk about that prep. You're working full-time. Why did you decide to take Kaplan?
I kind of wanted... So my whole plan, like, I really didn't want to take off more than 3 years. I really wanted to get back into the school mindset. And so how everything worked out is just when I was taking the classes and everything, like, I had to be taking physics too at the same time as trying to take the MCAT in April so that I could get my score back and apply and be one of the first people in the door for applications. So the way that it all worked out, I took Kaplan because I realized, like, I don't want to self-study and then be, like, disappointed with my score and then go back and take Kaplan. I decided to just work a little bit extra hard to get the money for Kaplan and then just take it and say, well, I didn't want to have any regrets, you know, about saying, well, if only I'd taken Kaplan, maybe my score would have improved. So that's kind of why I did it right away.
Would you recommend the majority of people out there take a test prep course, whether it's Kaplan or Princeton Review or MPrep, one of these other courses?
I think so. I think it depends on how you study. I mean, I feel like the test prep courses almost feel like a college class, and I think a lot of us are used to that at this point, that we're taking the MCAT, that we're used to college classes. But, I mean, if you're a really intense self-studier and you can follow a regimen and stick to a study schedule, because I have a problem with that, I like being held accountable. So I think that really helped me. Like, if I was in class and I hadn't done the homework, then I was kind of lost. And so I really wanted to make sure I did great on my score. So that's kind of why I took it, just to be held accountable. And I think it was really helpful. Like, the Kaplan class that I took was all online. Still had, like, lecture format with videos. And you could type in your questions and people would respond and everything like that. So I thought it was pretty well done.
Okay, very good. What was your biggest struggle with the MCAT?
I think part of it, well, I kind of already mentioned a little bit of it, but not having all the material done yet. We were, like, doing some of our physics lectures, and I hadn't even seen some of the material. So that was a little bit challenging. And also, I guess, just trying to, like, stick on my study schedule, because I still kind of made a plan for myself outside of Kaplan's. I think I took 7 to 10 practice tests. They recommend waking up, you know, like, so I think my test was on a Saturday. So they recommend kind of taking it on the same day at the same time. So having to force myself out of bed on a Saturday, like 7 in the morning, and go sit and take a 3-hour, 4-hour practice test was not necessarily my idea of fun. So that was probably the hardest part.
I don't think you want to mention that now that the people taking the MCAT are sitting for 8 hours.
Oh, yeah, true.
But 8 hours prepares you for the boards, which are 8 hours as well. So
oh, definitely, yeah.
it's not a fun change, but it's a change that will prepare you for what's to come. So that's good.
Yeah, and I had a psych minor. So actually, I participated in one of the MCAT, like, they did those practice tests where they, like, were testing questions on some of the people. And so I actually sat and took that. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's, like, important to have those skills going into medical school, like, either whether it's psych or biochemistry, which was our first class this year, which I hadn't had in 4 years. So that was probably would be helpful for people coming in. So they just have to think about the end goal, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very interesting. Let's talk about the application. I know at one point we had talked about your decision process in applying, what schools to apply to.
Right.
Talk about how you weeded out schools and how schools made your list with your applications.
So first off, I should say that finances were not a factor. I am currently a second lieutenant in the Air Force, so I'm on scholarship. So that wasn't a factor for me at all. I kind of looked at what my, for MD schools, I applied to both. For MD schools, I kind of looked at what my stats were. I feel like they're more heavily weighted on numbers rather than like overall application. So I kind of looked at what my stats were and I applied to a few schools that I thought I was competitive at. And then I applied to a few REACH schools. But I kind of did a shotgun approach. And so I applied to like 30 schools. Overall MD and DO, and I kind of just threw my application out there and tried to see what stuck. Overall, I did both coasts. I did Midwest because that's where I'm from, Minnesota. DO schools, I applied to almost all of them. A couple I weeded out because of board scores. I didn't apply to any Caribbean schools. But yeah, I kind of just threw it all out there because I really wanted to get in this year, so I put a lot of effort into it. And that's kind of how I made my decision, I guess.
How did you figure out board scores for the schools?
I'm trying to remember. I think I actually did use Student Doctor Network at that point. They made some sort of document on there, and so I was looking at the different board scores. Because some schools, if they don't have great board scores, they actually don't really show them on their website. Like, mm-hmm. The schools that are really proud of their board scores, like, it's kind of one of the first things you see on your admissions. And my school has a great board score, so that was kind of one of the things I applied here, and because I'm in Colorado.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think there was a document at some point I saw that had that all listed out, and I actually made an Excel sheet that showed my GPA, what the last year's students' kind of average GPA was for all the schools I applied to.
Okay, very interesting. Now, you mentioned that you're a second lieutenant.
Yep.
What branch did you say?
Air Force.
Okay, the smart choice. Good.
Yep, best branch.
Is
yep.
that did you is that the HPSP scholarship?
It is, yep.
Okay, awesome. And what was your decision behind that?
So I actually interviewed at Rocky Vista, the school I'm going to, in September. It was one of the first interviews. I think it's mostly because I got my application in right away, which I totally recommend doing if you can. But I talked to the professor that I mentioned before that was a PA for like 15 years, and he asked me, Rocky Vista is actually the second biggest producer of military physicians in the entire country, like not excluding the Uniformed Services University. Hmm. And so it's kind of a big deal here. And he asked me about it. And I said, well, by the time I graduate med school, I'm going to be 29. And I really don't want to put like extra time into the military. And he's like, oh, well, you should think about it. And I was like, okay, whatever. But I didn't really think it was going to be for me. I actually met with an Army recruiter at the time. And they were pretty impressed with my statistics and everything. Also, HPSB has like a pre-acceptance program, I think it's called. I'm not totally sure what the name is. But if you have a certain GPA and statistics like on your MCAT, then they have like an automatic acceptance. And so at the time, I thought that I was going to be automatically accepted. So I kind of looked into it a little bit. One of the doctors I used to work with in the ER was an Air Force doc for a while. And he kind of convinced me to go into that specific branch. And I kind of started talking to a recruiter. It's kind of a long story, but then I kind of just decided that, you know, like another 4 years of my life doing the exact specialty I want to, but just for the military is not a big deal. And I'm really excited that they're paying for my school and I get a great stipend. So I live by myself in a pretty nice apartment and I don't have to worry about money. It's great.
the signing bonus probably didn't hurt either. So that's probably what you were talking about, where really money wasn't a factor, right? Was the signing bonus a part of that?
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, it took me a lot. I didn't realize, but a lot of my friends in my program were getting theirs and I wasn't. So I kind of had to call them and figure out why my bonus wasn't coming in. So it actually took a while. But yeah, now that I have that, it's pretty nice.
All right. So that's awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thanks.
That choice. Obviously, I made that same choice a long time ago when I was 29 when I graduated medical school as well. But you had mentioned something in there that sure. I want to ask you about. You had said working the specialty that I want to do for 4 years, mm-hmm. only doing it in the Air Force instead of in the civilian world, wasn't that big of a risk to you or a change for you.
Yep.
What's to guarantee that you get the specialty of your choice?
Oh, so there's that little caveat. But so I don't know 100% too much about the military match. But basically, if you are on scholarship in any of the military branches, you have to enter the military match. And you can try to get into the specialty you want. There is that slight caveat that you won't get into it. Actually, in the Air Force, there aren't enough residency positions for how many people are on scholarship. So they do have this other little thing where they have sponsored residencies where you can go to a civilian residency and they'll pay the residency your salary. But there is also that caveat that you can't get into the specialty you want. I think it's similar to the civilian world where you also, like, if you want to be an orthopedic surgeon, you know, it's kind of competitive. But I mean, there's that small risk, but I think right now I'm kind of thinking about ER. I'm also thinking about family medicine, and those two aren't necessarily what I would say being the most competitive residencies. I'm just trying to do the best I can and hope that it works out for the best. Okay. But I guess there's that small little component of, if you don't get into it, they might, I don't want to use the word make you, but that you might have to do a transitional year, or you might have to work as just like a, I can't remember what it's called, but just do like a general year where you don't actually work in a specialty.
Well, you do work in a specialty, so I'm kind of disappointed you don't know all this after probably listening to some of my podcasts. But if you don't get the specialty you want, you'll go and do your internship year, whether it's a transitional year or a general surgery year or an internal medicine year, and
right.
then you can reapply again. And mm-hmm. hope you get your specialty. At that point, they can say, you know what? You're going to be a general medical officer.
Right, yep.
And if you're healthy enough, then you're going to be most likely a flight surgeon. And mm-hmm. you get to go do one of the best jobs in the Air Force there is, hands down.
Right, yep.
So a lot of people, I think, they take this HPSP scholarship and they assume that they're going to get the specialty they want. And when they don't, and they're told they need to go be a flight surgeon for a year or two or three or whatever it is, there's a lot of regret for taking the scholarship. There's a lot of, I can't think of the word, but just a lot of pissed off people, really, is what it comes down to.
Okay.
And really, I think it's the understanding that you have to be flexible when you're taking this scholarship, that you might have to do 2 years as a flight surgeon before you can go back and reapply and get the specialty you want. Because with the military match, it's all based on points. And you get a certain number of points for your preclinical years. You get a certain number of points for your clinical years in medical school. And really, after you're done applying, when you're applying the first time for the military match, that's really all the points you have. You can have some points for research. You can have some bonus points in there, typically from the residency director, if you've hit it off with him or her. But then you're also applying against flight surgeons that are now coming back and wanting to go back and do whatever specialty you're applying for. So you're competing against those kind of people as well. You're competing against former enlisted people that have bonus points because they're former enlisted. So
yeah,
I think everybody, I highly recommend the HPSP scholarship to everybody. It's getting out of medical school debt-free is an amazing feeling. Having some flexibility with your life and understanding that you may move a place where you don't really want to move, or you may be a flight surgeon for a couple years and delay that emergency medicine residency a couple years. That's in the grand scheme of things, it's nothing. The debt-free part is huge. So I congratulate you for making that choice. I think it's a great choice, but I want you to be flexible. At the end of the day, if you don't get emergency medicine, which is competitive for the military, if you don't get it, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also thinking, you know, I'm actually kind of in between emergency medicine and family medicine right now, and a flight surgeon, as I understand it, is very similar to family medicine, so I don't see that as being a bad thing. I also really kind of am excited that they're going to put me wherever they need me, because I think that's kind of a good opportunity to travel, even if it's just in the United States. But one of the graduates we just had chose family medicine, and he's asked for a special forces designation, and so he's going to Japan. So I think, you know, like, there's a lot of options in the military too.
Yeah.
I also think that their residency programs are pretty competitive with civilian, and so I think some people think that the residency programs in the military are not as good for some reason. I just don't think that they've researched well enough, because I think they're really competitive and really good programs. So
yeah, there are some caveats here and there, but overall they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so I want to know, during the application process, what was probably the biggest thing that threw you for a loop, or something maybe you didn't expect during the application process?
Oh, so I definitely have a good answer for that one. So like I said, I really wanted to get my application in right away. I mean, I think my DO1 took a little bit longer, because I actually wrote a whole new personal statement for that one, since it had to be, I think it was a little bit shorter length than the MD application. But one of my letter writers, which I think this is a pretty common problem for a lot of pre-meds, one of my letter writers, his house actually burnt to the ground the summer that he was writing my letter.
I hope that's not common for all the letter writers.
Yeah, but like, I mean, more in general, like, people have problems getting their letters back from their people they ask in a good timely manner. But his, so that was pretty intense. His house was struck by lightning. And so I actually had kind of like an internal struggle of, okay, like, I kind of want my letter back, but I also don't want to be like nagging, because he's trying to figure out his whole life and everything. And I did talk to a lot of the other scribes that I worked with, and they had whether they had a committee, because I didn't have a committee letter. A couple of people struggled getting their committee letter back in a decent amount of time, and things like that. So I think that was kind of one of my struggles, is trying to ask him nicely if he was working on my letter versus trying not to be a jerk about it, because he had a lot of stuff going on. But it ended up working out. I mean, I think I turned my application in end of June or early July or something like that.
No.
So it wasn't a problem, but I was just kind of afraid about asking him back for it, which I think some people are kind of nervous about, especially if you don't know your professors that well, trying to be assertive about that kind of thing. But
yeah, it's definitely, I've talked to some people, their applications are delayed by months because of delayed letters. And so ask for those letters early and often.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. What were some of the best resources that you used along your journey?
I think for the most part, since I was a scribe, I kind of used mostly my job. Because I was waiting a couple of years and taking these prerequisite classes, I got to see a lot of other people going through the application process. So I got a lot of really good advice about, for example, like, you got to make sure you ask your letter writers really early, especially because in the summer, a lot of these professors are writing letters. So you want to be one of the first people out the gate, especially if you know that they want them to write you a letter. And I hadn't actually seen a couple of these professors in a couple of years, so I went up to campus and talked to them face-to-face about what I wanted in my letter. So that was kind of one of the things that I looked at. I mean, I talked to a couple of the doctors I worked with, but only like a couple of the ones I worked with were like just out of residency, which means their application process was like at least 8 years ago. But I think it was mostly my friends that were in the same process. I didn't really have an academic source because I was out of school. I didn't use the institution at all that I took my prerequisites at, because they're such a big school. I wanted to use my small school, but I didn't really use them as much as I probably should have. I think I read a couple books. I listened to your podcasts. That's kind of all I really did.
Okay. Very cool. Now that you're a medical student, you're on the other side, and you can kind of see that light at the end of the tunnel. What would you say to the freshman in college or the sophomore in college that's struggling with some of maybe some of those same decisions that you had, to let them know that it's worth it to keep pushing forward.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a really long process. Sitting in these organic chemistry classes in the summer at 8 a.m., I was like, what am I doing with my life? But, I mean, looking back at it all, I think it all was worth it. I mean, the late nights that I spent in the ER, like, questioning, you know, do I actually really want to be a doctor? Like, I talked to my other physicians about it a lot, just looking for advice outside of your own head. Because I think people can tear themselves down on the inside and other people can't even recognize it. A couple of my friends here are actually struggling with, now they're in medical school and they're like, do I actually really want to be a doctor still? I think definitely knowing, especially early in undergrad, if you know for sure that you want to be a doctor, just do as the best you can to be able to get there and be happy. Definitely go shadow a bunch of different physicians. I mean, it sounds like I'm pretty set on the ER thing, but it's not totally true. I'm definitely like looking at different options still and seeing what works out best for me. Just trying to get into the mindset of, yeah, it's one thing if you think you want to be a doctor, but to know that you want to be a doctor is a completely different thing. And then being able to show that in your interview and be confident about it. Because I think a lot of people are still on the fence, even when they're interviewing, like, oh, like if I don't get in this year, maybe I'll do something else. But you have to really show that you want to be a doctor. And I think that kind of portrays with how you spend your years in undergrad.
All right. Again, that was Amanda. Great story. Interesting to hear how she went from wanting to do PA stuff and then realizing that they don't really get to do all of the stuff that maybe she wanted to do, finding out what osteopathic physicians are and do is very interesting. Having that kind of exposure and that aha moment to go, oh, DOs are physicians. And so something I preach on here all the time is MDs and DOs are equal. They are physicians. Unfortunately, we have this dichotomy in our society where, especially among pre-med students, there's this thought that you only go to DO schools if your grades aren't good enough for an MD school. But that's just not the case. If you're interested in the DO philosophy, which I've argued on here before, I don't know if I really buy the philosophy as being that much different than the MD philosophy. But MDs, DOs are equals, and that's okay. All right. If you got a ton of great information out of the podcast today, I would love for you to share this with somebody. Go tell your neighbors, go tell your classmates, go tell your roommates, go tell your pre-med advisors. Let them know about the immense information that you learn every week here at the Medical School Headquarters podcast. And if you want to take a second and leave us a rating and review in iTunes, I will never turn those down. medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes, you can do that. We have a couple here I want to read off to say thank you. MA Baller 17 says, extremely helpful podcast. This podcast has been a life changer for me. We have the Itchy Sweater, who says, enjoyable, informative, and accurate. I love it, the Itchy Sweater. And we have B Solet, says, the best medical resource on iTunes. I don't know about the best medical resource, but thank you for that. I'll take that. Thank you. And one more here, NVF Sassif says, Dr. Ryan and Allison are my heroes. Well, you are my hero, NVF Sassif, for leaving a rating interview. I truly do appreciate it. And if you didn't stick around to the end of last week's episode, I'll talk about it here now. But here at the medical school headquarters, and when I say the medical school headquarters, I'm talking about me. I'm the only one here at the medical school headquarters. So it just sounds so much bigger when I say here at. But I am going to, at the request of many people now, I'm going to add a new podcast dedicated to medical school and medical students, talking about USMLE, talking about residency applications, talking about matching, talking about clinical rotations, talking about surviving your non-clinical years, your classroom years, all of that fun stuff. So all of the great information that I've been sharing here about the pre-med world, I hope to bring to medical students now. and talk about and talk with medical students and physicians more on the medical school side, not just pre-med side. So with that comes the need to sort of change the name of this podcast, because it really can't be the Medical School Headquarters Podcast and be talking about pre-med if I have another podcast that talks about medical school as well. So I need your thoughts. Email me, ryan@medicalschoolhq.net, and let me know. Here's my thought. My thought is to take the name of this podcast, the Medical School Headquarters Podcast, and just add the pre-med years, or call it the pre-med years at the medical school headquarters. Something along those lines. And then when I start the medical school podcast, I can call it the medical school years or mid-student whatever. Let me know your thoughts. I am keeping them separate so that medical students don't have to listen to MCAT stuff because they're done with that. And I know you as a pre-med student would like to hear the medical school stuff, but then you can just subscribe to the extra podcast. If you don't want to listen to it, you don't have to subscribe to the new podcast. So they will be two separate podcasts, but I need help. I need your help in trying to figure out what to name this one and the new one. So let me know, ryan@medicalschoolhq.net. I hope you got a ton of great information out of the podcast today. And as always, I hope you join us next week here at the Medical School Headquarters.